Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Announcement from Norway's Nobel Institute. U.S. President Barack Obama has been awarded the 2009 Nobel Prize for Peace.
It's a great moment for America and, of course, for President of the United States.
They've awarded it to him for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples,
as well as his outreach to the Muslim world and attempts to curb nuclear proliferation.
An extraordinary end to a remarkable year. A man who's been in office less than 1 year, but has quickly become a symbol of progress between the races.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
So Obama wins the Dynamite Prize, and you expect me to bash it, right? And you expect me to get angry and upset, say that they're a bunch of communist, leftist, socialist, anti-Americans who just gave one of their own another prize, and he's in great company with Yasser Arafat and Jimmy Carter. Well, I just said it, okay? Now can we move on? I mean, basically, that's it. I mean, you're shocked by this? You're shocked that an organization that would give Yasser Arafat and Jimmy Carter a Nobel Prize, and Al Gore, the biggest shyster of the century, in my opinion, they would give Obama a Nobel Prize for doing what? He discovered a cure for brain cancer while I slept? Has he discovered a cure for anything? They say, well, he's moving us towards world peace, they say. The last I checked, Ahmadinejad is speeding along with his desire to wipe Israel off the map. And if Obama's such a peacenik, why has he not pulled the troops out of Afghanistan? Now, we all know the Nobel Prize Committee is what it is. It gave Yasser Arafat a prize. It gave Al Gore, the con man, the head of the Corleone crime family, in my opinion, a prize for the fantasy of man-induced global warming. And you got to understand that the radicals who are in the Nobel or on the Nobel Committee really hijacked Nobel's prize. Now, who was Nobel? I've called it the Dynamite Prize for years because each year I kind of mock the prize. Sure, would I like one? I don't know. Who needs it? Just more taxes. It's a Dynamite Prize. It has as much meaning as the MacArthur Foundation Genius Awards. Has an actual genius been given a genius award in the last 10 years? They give it to left-wing hacks and deviants. The more deviant you are, the more of a genius you are to the MacArthur Committee. So the more of a socialist, leftist, whatever, the higher you are in the list of the Nobel Prize. Who is Alfred Nobel? Well, he invented dynamite. And what does the word dynamite refer to? Nobel originally wanted to call the compound he invented, the explosive compound he invented, Nobel's safety powder. But instead he came up with the word dynamite as a trademark name referring to the Greek word for strength. But what you don't know, you're going to learn here on The Savage Nation, because it's very important. If you're just a slavish leftist who thinks he deserved it, you're wrong. Because Nobel, in his 1895 will, said that the prize should go to, quote, the person who shall have done the most or the best work for fraternity between the nations and the abolition or reduction of standing armies and the formation and spreading of peace congresses. Now, notice it says, shall have done, in the award's original charter. What does that mean? It means the Nobel Prize should be based on an evident accomplishment. Obviously, Obama doesn't have such accomplishments. Now, on the other hand, you could argue that he has advanced the cause of world peace because he has placated North Korea, he's placated Iran, he's placated Russia. He's placated virtually every despotic regime on the planet, and he has forestalled the inevitable, just as Neville Chamberlain did in 1938-39. Remember, the same thing occurred, and we're seeing history repeat itself. Neville Chamberlain, Prime Minister of England in the 30s, created a temporary peace as well when he gave away Czechoslovakia to Nazi Germany. Chamberlain called it at the time peace in our time. That peace did last for a year, from September of 38 when he gave away the Sudetenland until September of 39 when Hitler invaded Poland. And the fact of the matter is, yes, in that sense, Obama has forestalled the inevitable confrontation with Iran, forestalled the inevitable confrontation with North Korea, has placated Russia by throwing Czechoslovakia and Poland to the wolves. So he's perfect for the Nobel Peace Prize because they have very short version of what peace means. The fact of the matter is, here's a man elected based upon no qualifications whatsoever, pushed into power by hidden forces around the world, and the same hidden forces are behind the Nobel Peace Prize. There is nothing more that I care to say. Nothing whatsoever. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to comment on the Dynamite Prize going to the Dynamite President, you can do so by calling that number. Yes, indeed, you can do so. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, right here on the local station that you are listening to. I turned on the news after I woke up, heard that he had won the prize, and I turned on the TV for an hour. I couldn't get any news on it. They were following a car chase. A car chase. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox News. 1 hour, car chase. A schleppy white pickup truck being followed by 20 police cars in Dallas. I said, well, what did the guy do, commit murder? Was he a terrorist? Apparently the guy didn't pay for gas. And then 20 police cars pursued him around the highways of Dallas for an hour. So I said to myself, how much gasoline did the cops waste chasing the guy who hadn't paid for his gas? How much gas did they waste going after him? I mean, the police in Dallas apparently have nothing to do. They're not allowed to go after illegal aliens. They're not allowed to go after drug dealers. I wonder how many illegal aliens got over the border while half the Dallas Police Department went after this one guy in a pickup truck who didn't pay for his gas. 30% of those in U.S. prisons are illegal aliens, and they probably commit more than half the crime in the country. But instead of going after the illegal aliens swarming over the border, the Dallas police are forced to go after one guy who probably had his job stolen by an illegal alien and couldn't pay to fill up his tank at a gas station owned by Hugo Chavez. What a world we live in. So play a little rock and roll. I'll drink my tea. I'll take my calls. It's a wonderful Friday. All right, that's got a little niceness to it. Well, play it. I feel like talking. Play the song. What is wrong with you guys? This song goes out to Barack Hussein Obama, the maximum leader, Chairman Obama. We all love you. See, they're singing to him. Bomba 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 bomba. Kaiser-in-Chief wins Nobel Prize. I'll be back.
The Nobel Peace Prize for 2009 is to be awarded to President Barack Obama for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples.
The nominating committee said that Mr. Obama was chosen for his international diplomacy efforts and specifically mentioned his outreach to the Muslim world and his work on climate change and nuclear disarmament. The president will receive $1.4 million along with that prize. He is the third sitting U.S. president to win it. After Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson.
The guys just wanted to have fun after a horrible week. So they put that together. I don't blame them. It's all become so absurd. Okay. Obama's prize, car chases and illegal aliens. Michael Savage has no comment on Obama's prize. Just kidding. What an astounding world we're living in. It is Alice in Wonderland. Everything is upside down. A complete faker, a charming faker at that, cons his way into the White House with some very powerful friends, and now he cons his way into a Nobel Prize. Well, if Al Gore can get one for convincing these drug addicts in Norway that man has induced global warming or about to have the coldest winter in about 30 years, and they could give one to Yasser Arafat, the child killer, hey, I'm not shocked by it at all. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. It's Michael Savage. It's Friday. Lighten up. Let's see what the president himself has to say about accepting the Nobel Peace Prize in clip three.
I know that throughout history, the Nobel Peace Prize has not just been used to honor a specific achievement. It's also been used as a means to give momentum to a set of causes. And that
Wrong.
Is why...
Liar. Hold it. He's lying. He's lying. Hold it. He's lying. That's not the original... Those are not the original terms of the Nobel Award. That's a revisionist history. That is not at all what the original award was stated to have been granted to winners for. This is ridiculous. Nobel directed in 1895 that the prize should go to, quote, the person who shall have done the most of the best work. Shall have done. That's what it says. And it should be based on an evident accomplishment. So, again, the president is parsing words. He's reading some rubbish to reinvent history in order to justify this absurdity. You know, good luck to him. That's all. 1-800-449-82. I said that already. Chicago, Andy, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation on Rock and Roll Friday.
You start today, Mr. Savage, by having something in common with Barack Obama. You, sir, received a boycott from Britain that you did not deserve. He has received a Nobel Peace Prize, which he does not deserve. And it's what you've done with those. What have you done? You've been courageous. You've wrote a book. You fought it. You've been an island. What is he going to do with his? That's the question, is it not?
What, the money?
No, not the money. Just what is he going to do with this prize?
What did you do with I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do with this prize. I think he's going to continue to placate the worldwide socialist conspirators.
Probably, but I just...
Hey, you know what we have? I thank you, Andy. What we have for you is a rap song inspired by Michael Savage entitled Liberalism is a Mental Disorder by a black rap group called The Infidel. Do we have that ready? Just, you should... I think the people are starting to catch on to this, if you have it.
This is in a free society from so-called progressives and liberals. They want no free speech. They were going to go for the entire socialist agenda all at once.
They were going to take America 1, 2, 3.
Time to set the record straight, call BS defeated. All because of an illness, too hard to eradicate is liberalism. The mental disorder, the sad state of mind. Impervious to common sense and reason to them. Nothing that's out of mind, everything is deceased. Right or wrong makes no difference to them. If it feels good, do it. So I had to keep my distance from them. Cause they're out of the mainstream, but they say that I am. Because I love my country and
I love these guys. Who are these guys? Does anyone know who they are? Hey, well, can we find them and get them on the show next week? You are? You're looking for them? Let's make them famous. Let's stop for a minute. I'll tell you what. You know, I was watching a Biography Channel last night for 3 minutes, and they always glorify, you know, entertainers, isn't it? So they were talking about Jimi Hendrix, whose music I love, and they said that he was discovered by a French disc jockey, which is kind of funny unto itself. Just the three words together, French disc jockey. I don't know, somehow it made me chuckle. But apparently in 1967 or so, a French disc jockey heard Jimi Hendrix, and they made him famous just because of a French disc jockey. Maybe I, Michael Savage, the infidel, can make this group, the Infidel, famous. I don't need any of their money. I hope they become rich and famous. A black rap group that's patriotic and is on to liberalism and understands that liberals have been using black people since slavery days to advance their communist agenda. Wow, it doesn't get better than that. Now, I'll tell you, I saw a new low today in the news media. It wasn't the car chase. It was CNN for about 27 seconds, the lowest of the low. They flashed to a Palestinian zoo, and they said that the poor Palestinian children have to pat a donkey on the back, not a real zebra, because the bad Israelis won't let them bring in zebras. And so the poor explosive experts in Gaza have to paint donkeys black and white to look like zebras, so the children in Gaza can see what a zebra is without actually touching a zebra. And it's all because of the evil Jews. Listen to clip 16. I'm not making it up. It's from CNN, the lowest of the low.
These Palestinian kids visiting a zoo in Gaza, really excited to see their first zebras, only they're not zebras. The people running the zoo decided to paint up some donkeys black and white because they're not able to get any real zebras into the territory. Israel still got its Hamas embargo in place, and it would have cost $40,000 to bring a zebra in through smugglers' tunnels.
Well, this woman on CNN has always been known as a laughingstock, but even she in the morning has to look at herself in the mirror and say to herself, as she wakes up before the pancake makeup is put on, and say, you know, I'm not worth anything. I am garbage. I am filth. I am rubbish. I am not worthy of the respect of a human being. But I doubt that she'll do it because the psychiatric profession no doubt gives her the drugs necessary to get up every morning and regurgitate this kind of garbage. You talk about propaganda. I've never seen anything like this. Well, anyway, I am a media watcher. I'm a media watcher. And here, of course, is Nancy Pelosi hitting back, saying, I'm in my place. Listen to Nancy Pelosi in clip 15.
It's really sad. Exactly. I really don't understand how inappropriate that is. I'm in my place. I'm the Speaker of the House, the first woman Speaker of the House, and I'm in my place because the House of Representatives voted me there. But that language is something I haven't even heard in decades.
Oh, my. Well, the world is in San Francisco, and you're in your place. And I got to tell you something. The world is laughing at you behind your back, no matter what you may think. You really are really out of place. Truthfully, no matter how much lipstick and Botox.
Savage.
I'm telling you, the world's changing right in front of your eyes. A black rap group called The Infidel to do a song based on my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. There's a whole world shifting underneath your feet. They understand Obama's a token. They understand that he was picked by the white liberal socialist establishment to do their bidding. They understand what's going on. They don't need anyone on CNN or Fox News to tell them what's going on. I see a whole world changing. How about you? 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Tennessee Rose. Tennessee Rose, you're up on the Savage Nation. Tennessee Rose, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to let you know that I had finally found something that me and Obama agreed on. He did not deserve the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, my God. Well, why do you think he was selected to win this the Dynamite Prize?
His color. I mean, he ain't great.
Well, remember, the committee made their choices in February. Did you know that?
Well, I've been listening to the news, and I heard somebody say he'd only been in office, what, 12 days?
When they picked him, huh? I guess the same international socialist cabal that picked him to be president picked him to win a Nobel Prize.
I guess Acorn had a lot to do with that. I don't know.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Pretty amazing. They say he captured the world's attention and given its people hope for a better future? This is unbelievable to me. Someone said it's like giving the award into something like Pee-wee soccer. Everybody wins for trying. You agree with that one?
I don't feel like his people is what, you know, giving the prize. I mean, if maybe if a poll had been done at that time, you know, there would have been enough people that would have rose up and said, yeah, he's a great president, but they
ought to... this prize is supposed to be for doing, not for dreaming. He even said he hasn't done much yet. He himself said he hadn't done much yet. Well, thank you very much. Look, you look down the list of Peace Prize winners. You see Jimmy Carter, who won in 2002 for his decades of untiring effort to find peaceful solutions to international conflicts. Last year's winner, Martti Ahtisaari, was cited for his important efforts on several continents over more than three decades to resolve international conflicts. And Obama gets the award for a few weeks. 2 weeks. The nominations were due February 1. The other two sitting presidents who won the prize, Woodrow Wilson in 1919 for founding the League of Nations, a disaster, by the way, and Teddy Roosevelt in 06 for negotiating an end to the Russo-Japanese War, a real accomplishment, they were in their second terms. So you understand what this is. This is all part of the celebrity process, the instant celebrity that has been granted the man. The man leads a blessed life, you know, and God bless him for that, that he's a star over his head. The fact of the matter is, there are other people who could have won. Who could have won? That's an interesting one. If the Nobel Committee did an honestly great job of picking a worthy candidate, who should they have chosen? I don't think Obama's cheerleaders did him a favor with this. I think it's just going to create the opportunity for people to further lampoon the Obama as Messiah concept that has become so prevalent in the minds of anyone with a brain. We have a worldwide socialist conspiracy operational. I can go all over the world, I can tick off one country after another, and I can show you what's happening in the world and who's running it and why. Every country is under a socialist yoke, and it's only the beginning of what's coming. In Spain, we're getting a lot of international callers who listen to this show on the Internet. While freedom of the Internet and freedom of the press still exists, Michael in Spain, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Thanks for giving all us conservatives out there strength to fight this this liberal agenda. I'm in probably the worst socialist country in the world, Spain, headed by José Luis Zapatero. He's got the... political savvy of Gavin Newsom, only worse.
Well, here's the thing about Spain. It was a very fine government ruling it until the subways were bombed by the Muslims within. And let's not mince words. Muslims bombed the subways, and immediately the people capitulated. The Spanish lost their guts to fight. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. I was here when it happened. And,
The Spanish have gone from the conquistadors in stainless steel or metal suits to disco kings now?
No, just skinny socialists, you know, with their designer jeans, skinny arm vegetarian types with their little glasses, you know, they're trying to look like a Woody Allen, you know.
Oh, they're trying to have a low profile, keep their head down.
Yeah, he's a hero over here. They have statues of that pedophile over here.
Of Michael Jackson?
No, Woody Allen.
Oh, Woody Allen is a hero in Spain?
You can't believe it. You can't believe it.
That's a strange one. From a country that gave us the Inquisition to suddenly pick up on Woody Allen, that's a pretty big jump. I mean, that was a nation that invented the term Marrano. You know what that is, don't you?
No, what?
The Marranos were Jews in the Middle Ages who were forced to convert to Catholicism. Otherwise, they would be tortured and killed. So many of them on the surface converted into Catholicism, but they practiced the religion under the surface. That they were called Marranos.
There's another term for them. But you got to remember that there are a bunch of apologizing sad sacks now. You know, they apologize for being conquistadores. They apologize for the Inquisition. They're always apologizing for the Franco years, which by the way, he saved 60,000 Jews. He allowed them into the country because he knew Hitler.
That's right. I know the whole story of the Spanish Civil War. Most of the Americans that went over in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade were diehard anti-American communists. They should have been thrown out of the country before they went into the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. I actually met a few of those old rotten people in North Beach in the early days. So what are you doing stuck in the Iberian Peninsula?
Well, you know, I'm teaching English over here because I can't find work in America for the last 7 or 8 years.
So you're sort of an illegal immigrant in Spain, in Andalusia. You're in the new Andalusia. You know Andalusia, of course, as a teacher, what that is.
Yes, all Andalus. That's what they used to call
it. That's right. Have they changed the name of Spain to Andalus yet? To placate the Moors amongst them?
Well, they're trying to get rid of their patron saint, Santiago, who's the patron saint of Moor slayers. I mean, they're trying to get rid of any type of religion here, like they did back in the Republic, by the way.
Well, the communists have long wanted to get rid of the church, and now they're doing it through political correctness.
Absolutely. And, you know, they got rid of it during the Republic, and that's why the Republic failed. You know, the whole idea of socialism, and you've said it, we all say it, it's about getting rid of foundations to destroy the society. So you're just relying on the government. That's it.
That's right. The new religion is the state. The new Messiah is the head of the state. That is why Obama is worshipped as a head of state, because they've turned him into God. They've made him into a substitute for Jesus. Do you understand that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. In other words, the Christian should worship Obama instead of worshiping Jesus, because Obama represents not the church but the state. That's what communism is.
Absolutely. And I mean, you just see it. I mean, Europe is just going down the tubes. I mean, it's like.
Oh, wait a minute. The radical Muslims went down into the tubes and bombed it with some compound. I don't think that Alfred Nobel invented. They didn't use TNT.
They used plastic explosives. But now this is, you can't believe the overrunning of people from South America, Eastern Europe, Africa, North Africa, Senegal.
But is there a right-wing party in Spain that is nationalistic, that would like to see the glory of the days of the great Spain restored? Is there such a group left in that country?
Absolutely. There's a few of them left, but they got to be careful. They can't display, you'll like this, they can't display certain insignias. You can't go on Franco's birthday up to where he's buried and do certain things or say certain things. They're watching, they're filming you. I've been to Franco's.
So in other words, the leftists have turned it into a police state, a fascist police state.
Absolutely.
It's the new Soviet Union with paella. Instead of serving borscht, they serve paella.
Absolutely.
Hey, how is the paella in Spain these days? Is it any good?
It depends on where you go. You know, if you go to certain places, they make it right. If you go to like a tourist place, it's complete crap. If you make it at home, you know, because they got all the components to make it with.
I make the best paella in the world. I do, because I use expensive saffron to begin with. Most paella, by the way, since we're talking about cuisine, I can't help it because I lived in Spain for a while, a very brief period. I really love the food. I actually lived in Mallorca, Arenal de Mallorca, and I used to eat in a local little restaurant. I think it was 30 pesetas for lunch. It was unbelievable. Most paella is made not with saffron, but with a cheaper substitute, which simply colors the food rather than flavors it, number one. And number two, they over-oil it. They don't cook it long enough to create that slight crust on the bottom because they're anxious to get it out of the oven. And it's too filled with butter to have a proper taste.
When I've made it before, I mean, you know, you can buy really good saffron here for a very affordable price.
Where is the saffron grown?
It grows all over Spain. I'll tell you what, that's the one good thing the Moors did do. They brought that here, actually, from the Middle East or North Africa.
Well, the Moors also discovered coffee. Everyone forgets that the Arab conquistadors discovered coffee in Ethiopia. Everyone forgets that. That was another great addition to the world.
Chairman.
Thanks for listening in Spain. 1-800-449-8255. Michael in Spain, thank you very much. We're talking basically about the news of the day. We're talking about the absurdity of Obama, an untested president, who's frankly failed at everything he's tried to do. I'm sorry to say. You know, even though I'm a conservative and a nationalist, I would like to see a president who put America first and a president who was advancing the causes of American strength, whether he'd be, let's say, a Democrat or Republican. It wouldn't matter to me, truthfully, in that sense that I'm a true independent. I don't care what the party insignia says. But the man failed wherever he's gone. He's got nothing but a disastrous failure. That's why this is a double insult. But what do you, this is a shock to you. It's not a shock to me. It's shocking to you because you think you thought the Nobel Prize was sort of objective and above influence peddling. I happen to know for a fact that you can buy Nobel Prizes. I know it because I think 10 or 15 years ago there was a great scandal when a car dealer in Yonkers, New York, lobbied the Nobel Prize Committee to give it to an Israeli for something he didn't deserve. And he just spread the money around amongst the wonderful, highly esteemed folks in the Nobel Prize Committee who are about equal in ethics to the International Olympics Committee. Now, let's not forget that just last week, Obama was slapped in the face when he tried to peddle the Chicago Olympics. Chicago is the site for the Olympics, right? He got slapped in the face. The U.S. came in last. So this is an attempt right now by the media to rescue a failing presidency. I'll be back.
Savage.
Would you like me to talk about the trick to white teeth or how to get a flat stomach? Because if so, I mean, I could do the CNN Fox thing. Flat stomach rule, how a housewife whitened her teeth. That would be something appropriate for the American voter today, wouldn't it? German publisher fearing Muslim retaliation cancels honor-killing novel. See, that's the new world that you live in. That's, of course, why you understand I've been banned from Britain. Let's lay it on the line. I was banned from Britain because the Muslims, no doubt, are more important to Gordon Brown than the history of his own nation. And then the Cambridge Union, the brave boys of the Cambridge Union canceled my appearance. They're going ahead without me. Fine. It's their loss, not mine. Because, again, they're afraid of the Muslim reaction. What about the American reaction to Muslim violence? Why don't Muslims fear that? Why is it that Muslims don't fear the American reaction to their violence all over the world? How is that possible that we're all being intimidated by the so-called Muslim retaliation? We're canceling novels. We're canceling pictures of cartoons. A play has been canceled. It's unbelievable to me what's happened to the West. And now, of course, we have a president given a false Nobel Prize. They say specifically because of his outreach to Muslims. That's all well and good. But what has it gotten him from the Muslim Ahmadinejad? Has it gotten Ahmadinejad to stop threatening to wipe Israel off the map? It hasn't. It's only encouraged him. So that's why we're talking about this. That's all. What else do you want to talk about? Flat stomachs? White teeth? Whatever. Play some rock and roll for me. It's an interesting day in the Savage Nation.
Mama said there'll be days like this.
Man. I'm not in the mood for that, really. I don't know. Isn't there something better? Something a little more exciting?
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine. You sure look
fine. I'll tell you what. The truth is, I'm so fed up with Obama and his phoniness and fed up with international socialism that I'd rather read Fat Al's Tuna from Psychological Nudity, even though it's not a book that I'm currently hawking. Great book, Savage Radio Story. Let me read it. Shut that off. I was 17 and working as a busboy at Shanks Paramount Hotel up in the Catskill Mountains in New York. I'd worked there every summer to pay for college. The hours were gruesome. We'd work from 5 in the morning until midnight. You had to get up at 5 to prep the breakfast. Then you worked the early bird. Then you worked the breakfast. You weren't out of the dining room until 10. You were sweaty and dirty. Then you had to be back at 11:30 in the morning for the crowd to pour in for lunch. And you had to smile at them. They usually rip a bill in half and say to you, "Hey, kid, my name is George Shapiro. Let me tell you something. See this $20 bill? Me and my family are going to be here for 2 weeks. Take this half of the bill. I promise this really happened. He'd say, give me good service, and I'll give you the other half. Anyway, then you'd work the lunch rush. You'd clean up only to get ready to serve dinner. You wouldn't get out of there until 9 and be back at midnight for the snack. That's the way it worked. It was something out of Dickens. You know, kitchens and how they worked fascinated me. They always have. How they could serve so many different meals so quickly. I love to see the guys carrying the trays and the guys screaming at them from the back, watch out, moron! It was awe-inspiring. The running, the hustling, the bustling, and the screaming at each other. I remember in the kitchen there was a guy we called Fat Al. He was the breakfast and lunch cook, a fat Italian guy, maybe 400 pounds of blubber. Underneath the blubber was solid iron. He had a neck on him like a tree stump. He'd wear a bandana around his neck and on top of his head, and he'd sit with a cigarette hanging out the side of his mouth as he cooked. I don't know how old he was. He could have been 38. To me, he looked 90. One day, old Fat Al called me over and he said, hey, kid, come over here. I'll show you how to make the tuna. As I watched, his cigarette dangled from his mouth over the bowl. I'll never forget how Fat Al didn't use a Cuisinart to mix things, you know, with the stainless steel blades that all the fancy chefs use today. Nope. Fat Al mixed stuff with his big mitt. He'd be up to his armpit in the tureen mixing the tuna and seasonings, his arm going around and around in the bowl. At one point, he said, all right, kid, throw in the mayo. So I'm throwing in the jars of mayo. He keeps mixing it with his hairy arm in the bowl. I'm saying to myself, some of the hair's got to be in the tuna. Of course his cigarette ashes were falling from his mouth also. So that's when I decided to take my chances and say something. I said, excuse me, Al, what about the ashes getting in there? He said, never mind. It gives it flavor. It gives it flavor. That's Fat Al's Tuner from Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories. Still a great book. Wonderful. I enjoy it. I hope you will, too. For those of you who bought it, you will, again, read it this Christmas around the fireplace. That's America, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. And this is the Savage Nation as we watch the world go up in smoke.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Prize for 2009 is to be awarded to President Barack Obama for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples.
The nominating committee said that Mr. Obama was chosen for his international diplomacy efforts and specifically mentioned his outreach to the Muslim world and his work on climate change and nuclear disarmament. The president will receive $1.4 million along with that prize. He is the third sitting U.S. president to win it after Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson.
Some kind of way out of here. Say the comfort to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
Amen, Jimmy.
Businessman there to drink my wine. Come and dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
It is the Savage Nation for this Friday, October 9, 2009. Do you think President Obama should reject the Nobel Peace Prize? Do you think so, yes or no? Do you believe he should reject the Nobel Peace Prize? I mean, after all, In 1994, one of the recipients of the prize was Yasser Arafat, and they said it was given to him for his efforts to promote peace in the Middle East. And Yasser Arafat was a baby killer. He encouraged the Intifada. He was corrupt. He stole Palestinian assets. His wife's living on them in Paris to this day. Jimmy Carter, a winner. Jimmy Carter. Of all people, Jimmy Carter, the Jew hater. Jimmy Carter, the anti-Semite, was a winner. Then, of course, the same committee gave it to Al Gore, the mother of all liars. Al Gore, the mother of all liars, in my opinion, the man who's come up with the biggest con of all time of man-induced global warming. Of course, he won one as well. And so, as I said to you, you know, I go back to when Obama won the nomination and when he won the presidency, when I said on this show that we don't really know who he's going to be like. I would suspect he's going to be more like Neville Chamberlain than anyone else. Remember I said that to you back in November of last year after the election? That he would be like a Chamberlain the appeaser in dealing with tyrants. And he is. And that's why they're awarding him this prize. They're encouraging the road he is on. And if you think it's the road to peace, it's because you do not know history. And I will remind you what a great Spanish philosopher, Santayana, once wrote. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it, and apparently we are repeating it. Ironically, on the very day, 70 years ago, that Czechoslovakia was thrown to Germany by Neville Chamberlain, Obama threw Czechoslovakia and Poland to boot to Russia when he said, I'm not going to give them a missile defense shield. It's astounding to me how history is repeating itself. And the American people, unfortunately, now are in a worse state than they ever were intellectually and mentally because the media is so 95-98% in the pocket of the Democrat socialist regime that is now in power. But if you'd like to talk about the Peace Prize, if you'd like to talk about the fact that this is a sham, I mean, I have in my hand the fact that the 19th century Swedish industrialist Alfred Nobel directed in his 1895 will that the prize should go, quote, to the person who shall have done the most of the best work. Shall have done. Now, if you know anything about English, which I doubt many Americans do anymore because they know how to Twitter, they know how to send emails, which are all basically in either the present tense, the future tense, or the past tense. But there are more tenses than those three. If you remember basic grammar, there was the pluperfect, the past perfect. Do you remember all of those difficult tenses that you had to learn in high school? That's if you're all over the age of 40. Today, with Twittering and the influx of illegal aliens, there may as well be only a single tense, a language with a present only. Because people don't even understand what shall have done means. Nobel Prize Will said, the prize should go to the person who shall have done the most of the best work. So the words shall have done are in the original charter of the Nobel Prize. And that means the award should be based on an accomplishment, shall have done, not might do, we hope he would do, he should do, he might do, he could do, because he's good looking, and he bops on the way to the podium, and we like the way he bops. No, it's not about how he bops up to the podium, or he has a wonderful sonorous voice. It's based upon shall have done. And so far as I know, he has done nothing. Can anyone name one concrete achievement to date? Can anybody name one concrete achievement of Obama to date? Perhaps I'm being too harsh in my criticism because I am a nationalist and a conservative. So you'd expect me to be, you know, expressing bitterness. It's not bitterness. It's absurdity. The whole thing is comic absurdity. It's comic absurdity. It actually undermines Obama rather than helps him, if you think about it. Why do I say it undermines rather than helps Obama? Because it adds to the comic concept that the man has been anointed sort of a messiah-like figure by the illegitimate left. That's why. Don't you understand this? New York City, WORD, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Michael. Thank you for taking the call. Before I make my statement, I'd like to preface it with the statement that I am not an Obama supporter. But I do disagree with you. I do not believe Obama is failing. He is carrying out his agenda to remove the last few vestiges of democracy that we have, and he's doing it quite well.
Well, he has the help of the Botox woman, Nancy Pelosi, a woman who you know wants talk radio eliminated. He's doing it with the help of all of the Democrats like Charles Schumer, who will not hold an honest debate on anything. They believe only in autocratic behavior, autocratic decision-making. They don't believe in any compromise or any discussion. That's tyranny, is it not?
And what I'm fearful about is that the public doesn't recognize it. And if they don't think there's going to be food shortages and food allotments and energy appropriate.
It's interesting you should say that. You know, I have been a student of politics since I'm about 17. And I made a statement when I was 17 or 18 years old that I still think is true, which is I've studied revolutions around the world, and revolutions generally never occur unless there's mass hunger. And we have a nation that's obese and fat, obese and stuffed, stuffed to the gills like pigs in a whatever, a sty. How can there ever be any kind of uprising against this illegitimacy by a people that is so stuffed with cheap calories? It's impossible.
Corn syrup and the products that they're putting in the foods. But when you go around the country and the world and you see the horrific climatic changes with the weather, that the crops are failing because of floods, they can't grow it. Eventually, when we run out of money and they debase our dollar and it comes down to the government will allocate, I don't think it's more than 10 years away.
We're projecting a nightmare scenario. It's almost like Y2K. I don't see us giving up the wheat fields, do you?
I see the government taking over, just like they did with the.
Well, Stalin took over the farms from the kulaks. They were the capitalist farmers of Russia who were producing food and making a living and feeding the Russian people. Stalin said this is no good, and he nationalized the farms, and there was mass starvation in Russia, and 30 million people starved to death. Look at what Mugabe did in Zimbabwe when he took over the white-owned farms. The people, while they were white-owned farms, admittedly on stolen land, but the whites were farming and producing a food surplus in Zimbabwe. Is that correct? They were exporting food. After the blacks took over the farms, there was mass starvation. They become basically a nation of begging cups. Thank you for the call. Look, the problem here is I've eaten from the apple of knowledge. And I know what's going on. And if you don't like it, if it's too much for you, we can play some rock and roll. So let's play a little rock and roll as we take our first break of the second hour. There you go, little Beatles. You know. Hi, John. How are you? Bang. John, I love your work. Boom. John, you're really a great guy. Bang. John, I really love you. I'm a big fan. Boom.
We all want to change. But when you talk about destruction,
yeah, turn it on. Nothing to be said. I don't even like the Beatles. I didn't like it when they were, you know, I didn't, as a kid, I didn't like them. I don't know why. I didn't get caught up in the Beatlemania. Yes, I grew my hair a little longer. I figured in order to get lucky, you had to look like them. But okay, but I never really went along with the whole Beatle thing. Even as a kid, I was out of step with the whole leftist socialist agenda. You know, it's funny. Last night, I watched a movie on my boat after the show. I went down on my boat and I turned the TV on. I never do it, but I'm doing it. And what was playing? Annie Hall with Woody Allen. Woody Allen's Annie Hall. It's a very funny movie. But in one of the scenes, there's a couple of scenes in it that are classically funny. In one of them, he goes to a party in L.A. And it was the whole L.A. New York thing that was fresh and exciting at the time, meaning which city was better and I really like New York. It was the New York snob thing, and L.A. sucks, and the only cultural advantage is making a right turn at a red signal. But in it, there are all sorts of people who are nothing today, like Paul Simon, the left-wing strummer from Kew Gardens. And it was amazing to look at this movie in retrospect and look at these people and remember how I felt when I first saw that movie, how somewhat envious I was of the strummer from Kew Gardens and Woody Allen, who was so cool at the time. And I say, look at them today. Any attention to any of them? And I said to myself, look how times have changed. The times, they certainly are changing, as is the time changing rapidly here on the Savage Nation. And I shall be back.
Savage.
Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that is.
it's naming. Was the loser, now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing.
He was absolutely right. He's prophetic, Bob Dylan. The loser now will be the win. The loser now will be the win. And look what's going on in the world. It's a world upside down. People without qualifications whatsoever are in high places giving each other awards. So the loser now will be the win. Of course, they give each other prizes for doing nothing. That's all. It's upside down. The whole world's upside down. It's exactly what happened in Mao Zedong's China. I told you the story 1,000 times, but I told you once. After Mao Zedong, the mass murderer, took over China, he went into the hospitals. I'm giving you an example of the medical system. And he took the surgeons out of the surgical wards in China, and he put them in the laundries and made them into laundresses and launderers, if he didn't outright kill them for being counter-revolutionary. And he took the dumb, illiterate peasant women who had worked in a laundry and turned them into the medical doctors. And he said to them, sister, you are now a doctor. And if they said to the cadre, the head of the cadre, but I don't know anything about medicine, they would shoot her for being a counter-revolutionary. So if you tell me we're not going through a Mao-like revolution in the United States of America, is because you're an ignorant moron who doesn't understand the first thing about history. Nothing about history. WOR, New York, Karen, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, Michael. I waited, and I'm glad I did. I called because I wish you would have Pastor Manning on. You had a few clips you played the other night of him. Because
yep.
He's the only minister he's out there. He's fighting. He's like you.
And yeah, he's good. We should play Pastor Manning in case you missed it. Karen, thanks for your compliments. Let's listen to Pastor Manning from Harlem, New York.
Hey, Hannity, why don't you have Michael Savage on? Just once a year, just one time a year. Just have Michael Savage on one time a year. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it because that's not what they want. They don't want the truth out there. They can't handle the truth. They don't want it out there. Bring Michael Savage on.
Well, maybe I can boycott Norwegian products, but I don't think they make anything, do they? Norwegian salmon? Smoked salmon? But I live in California where they make smoked salmon. I do like, what are they? The smoked salmon, but most of it's too smoky in California. They don't know how to make salmon out here. It's horrible. You can't even get good lox on the West Coast. I've lived here forever. It's very hard to teach people anything. Why do they smoke everything to death? It's like the coffee when they say French roast. You can't drink it because it burns your throat and gives you like a esophageal cancer. French roast. It doesn't have to be burnt with benzoapyrenes in the coffee bean to taste like a coffee. The same with smoking salmon. It shouldn't be so smoky that it tastes like burnt wood. Isn't there any way to make smoked salmon that isn't horrendous? Nova Scotia Lox. I never used cream cheese. It killed half the generation that preceded me. I think the bagels and lox killed half of them along with the brisket. But I don't eat any of that poison. Ugh, I used to hate it. It was a horrible food. I remember writing when I was 18 something about Sam the Deli Man wrapping all of his poison in orange cellophane. You remember those days when the delis would produce deli things with cellophane and everyone dipped like it was? It killed half the guys. Cedar Sinai, they lived off it. They lived off the Novi and the whatever. The world's really getting me crazy. It's getting nuttier by the day. All I care about is that it's nuts. How could they give a Nobel Prize to a guy who's done nothing? Does anyone understand this? Christopher in Austin, Texas, do you understand this? Why did they give him the prize other than to advance the socialist agenda?
Well, you know, as soon as I heard about it, your message weeks ago came to mind when we were talking about the missile shield and the fact that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we're taking it away. And, well, obviously, it's payment for him doing away with the missile shield.
But I have to disagree with you because the nominations went in on February 1st when he was barely 8 weeks in office. So this was all. See, the international socialist movement is so powerful that they took this unknown radical left-wing socialist senator from Chicago, from Illinois, and made him president. With foreign money. Remember, where the $900 million in his campaign funds come from? Nobody knows. Voter intimidation, the Black Panthers. And now they give him a Nobel Prize as though he actually did something.
Savage.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Ah, wake up.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. So, I mean, you could be shocked by this, but you have to look at the company. You can judge a man by the company he keeps. He's in the company of Yasser Arafat and Jimmy Carter and Hugo Chavez. Did they give Hugo Chavez a Nobel Prize yet for bringing justice to his nation, to Venezuela? Did they give one to Ruth Bader Ginsburg for bringing stupidity to the Supreme Court? Have they given a Nobel Prize to Hillary Clinton for being the most invisible Secretary of State in history? And they may as well give a Nobel Prize to Nancy Pelosi for being the first woman Speaker of the House. They can give a Nobel Prize to Madonna for introducing a false version of the Kabbalah to the idiots of Los Angeles. Or they could have given a Nobel Prize to John McCain for having thrown the election to Obama in order to bring on worldwide socialism even faster than the Republicans were able to do it. Or they can give one to Harry Reid for whatever. They could have given one to Arnold Schwarzenegger for having duped millions of Californians into thinking he was a Republican. Or they could have given one to George Soros for breaking the almost breaking the English pound and betting against the U.S. dollar. In the last few days, if that's what actually happened. Or they could have given one to Arthur Sulzberger Jr. for destroying a once great newspaper. Or they could have given one to Ted Turner for being the looniest man in the history of the media. But they haven't done any of that. So there it is. I mean, I have strong opinions. I understand that. And the reason I'm not popular is because, as the New Yorker said in their profile, I'm a party of one. You know I've been pretty harsh with the so-called conservatives. I mean, in my book, Political Zoo, I look back now, I could see why Rush Limbaugh and Hannity hate me and O'Reilly. I didn't even mention Hannity. He was too insignificant then, and he's too insignificant now. He didn't even make it into the Political Zoo. He's, of all of them, this is the stupidest of them. At least O'Reilly has an intellect. Admittedly, he's threatened by my brains. All right. But I did call him names, truthfully. I could understand why he never wants me on the show. I can respect the fact that he's chicken. So I don't mind that. Bill O'Reilly, lecherous leprechaunus. Oh, that's why. Because in the Political Zoo, remember that book was published in 06. I called Bill O'Reilly lecherous leprechaunus. Top mammal in the Fox News pundit cage, the American porcupine, is a large terrestrial rodent well protected by its prickly exterior. Well, come on. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger skin. Known for its grunting and groaning delivery, the porcupine is effective mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like Fetch the Loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. All right, I understand. I understand that. Okay, now you can see why a man who would go from Inside Edition to Fox News wouldn't want anything to do with me. I can understand that. And you took it, Rush Limbaugh, another guy, probably a nice guy, I guess. What do I know what he really is? Nobody knows. I lampooned him as Hushus Bimbosus in the Political Zoo. I pulled a book out. I'm deciding to look backwards. Hushus Bimbosus, the swell-headed bullfrog, one part frog, 10 parts bull, was born and bred in America's heartland. When not hopping noisily from golf course to golf course, this stogie chomping creature, a rare habit among frogs, spreads his largesse between two habitats, one in New York City and another in South Florida. Thought to be a frog of superior intelligence by frogs of inferior intelligence, this species transformed himself from a fat croaker in a little pond to a fat-headed croaker in a big one. In a strange freak of nature, the swell-headed bullfrog feeds primarily on its own ego. Known to jump from mate to mate, an unusual trait among the subspecies Conservatatus, this bullfrog appears unable to keep the female of the species for any length of time. Happily, it has yet to reproduce, for it fears competition even from tadpoles. Oh, play some rock and roll. I could see now it's all adding up why I'm alone.
The other night, I picked out a horse so my was sight. The name of the horse was a Ding Dong.
No. Okay, it's Ding Dong. That's the song. Whatever. Play the rap song for me for a minute. I just want to see the rap song again. Hear it one more time.
Those who agree know this right now. You ain't controlling me. Even if the cameras are roaming, the streets patrolling me. Where's the ACLU? Oh yeah, they only help gays, atheists, race baiters, and faith haters, and anyone else who tears the fabric of this country. So this soul was stealing ours for a back door.
We're going to find out who they are. They did this. It's on YouTube. We don't know if they're white guys or black guys, but I'm not a big rap fan, but since it's about me, I like it. It's a rap song inspired by Michael Savage entitled Liberalism is a Mental Disorder by the Infidel. We'll find out. We shall find out. Play one of the great one in clip six, Obama himself. Let's hear what he has to say about the Nobel Prize.
To be honest, I do not feel that I deserve to be in the company of so many of the transformative figures who've been honored by this prize.
You're right. All right, at least he's telling the truth. He's right about that. But before you go away mad, just go away with the truth. The prize, as stated in the 1895 will of Alfred Nobel, stated that the prize should go to, quote, the person who shall have done the most of the best work. Now, what do you think the word shall have done mean? It means he should have accomplished something. So in this sense, Obama knows he himself is stunned. You know, you remember the movie with Peter Sellers, where he's a gardener who's made into some leader? What was that movie called? Being There, right? Movie was Being There. I mean, this is the same thing. They make him into the president. Remember the first few weeks how out of place he looked going up and down Air Force One steps? Like, I can't believe this. You know, like he'd walk up, he always, like, he was slumped because he didn't feel like, because he never thought he'd pull it off. They promised him that he'd go, you know, right. First they made him a senator, didn't believe him. Then now they made him a president. Then they probably practice with fake Air Force One props. I would imagine they have a set somewhere deep in the caverns of somewhere in Langley where he practiced going up and down the steps till he actually looked like he belonged to waving. Remember the Reagan? They always turn and wave. At who? No one knows who they're waving at. Who are they waving at? Like some person that they know? So now he wakes up, and now on top of it all, on top of the charade of being president, now it's the charade of being a Nobel Prize winner. You know, even in the sciences, it's very political. You have to understand that if you've studied the Nobel Peace Prize and the Nobel Prize in general, the Peace Prize is always given to a socialist slash communist leftist anti-capitalist. So there's nothing new about that. But even in the sciences, if you look at the prizes in physics or chemistry, mathematics, even those prizes are highly politicized. They're not selected necessarily based upon the most incisive work. It's based upon who can lobby the best through whom that they get the prize. And you got to understand something. The amount of money that Nobel left is considered a pittance today. He left $250 million, the equivalent of $250 million today in kroner for his time. Do you realize how many fortunes there are in America that exceed that amount? That a person could come along today or tomorrow, put down the same amount of money that would produce the same amount of prize money in terms of interest. Why not call it another prize? It could be the Shapiro Prize, named for one of the people who gave away the missile defense technology to China. He made a lot of money. What was his name? I don't think it was Shapiro. What was it? The biggest supporter of the DNC at the time under Bill Clinton, who gave away our rocket technology to China. Wonderful human being. Started out with parking meters in the Bronx and parlayed it into a missile company, if I remember, an aviation company, and then gave away the missile technology to China to launch satellites. He must have made a lot of money. So you could call it like whatever, the Shapiro Prize. The Shapiro Prize for Peace. And what would it matter? Why not make the Soros Prize? After all, he makes a lot of money doing such honorable and honest things. Soros probably makes $250 million a month or a week. He could easily pay for a bigger prize than this. Think of how far he could advance. He doesn't have to give out a prize. He already gave the presidency away in the minds of millions of people who are analyzing this around the clock. But look, I happen to know the story of the Nobel Prize and how it's altered over the years. I remember when it meant something. Do you remember when Hemingway won the Nobel Prize? Everything changed in the 60s. Everything in the world changed in the 1960s. I don't actually think that the country survived the Earl Warren Court. I don't actually think that we survived the communist movement and how it invaded the universities first to take over the hearts and minds of an entire generation of drug addicts. I actually believe that the entire world is now socialist slash communist on the road to pure and absolute slavery. Tom in Palm Beach, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mr. Savage. I love your show. I was just wanted to comment on Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize. It just really hit me home because I lived in Africa for 17 years, and I saw corruption, you know, firsthand. You know, I lived in these nations where there was war. I lived with my family there, and I watched people's lives just become, you know, just destroyed because of, you know, governments and people in charge taking over and just destroying lives. And really, that's all this is just this whole thing with the Nobel Peace Prize is corruption.
How do you leap from government corruption in Africa to the Nobel Peace Prize? Where's the connection?
Well, the way I look at it is Obama is, you know, he's in the liberal democratic side of the government. And that party is corrupt. You can just, you look at it, you look every day, the things that they're lobbying for, the thing that they're standing for.
Yes, and they will not have conversations with opponents on any issue. They do with the Al Gore. They only present ideas. They don't receive anything. They only talk. I understand that. Now, the Clinton contributor was Bernard Schwartz, if you remember, Loral Space Technologies. It just came back to me. He must have made a fortune on that technology. And I would think that he could create the Schwartz Prize in international peace. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The times they are changing. We've talked about Obama with the Nobel Prize all day long. Newsweek interviewed me this morning, and I said this is unbelievable. No one can believe this. What has he done? Has he discovered a cure for brain cancer that I don't know about? Is he moving us towards world peace? Last I checked, Ahmadinejad is speeding along with his bomb. If Obama is an anti-war president, why hasn't he pulled us out of Afghanistan? I said. We all know what the Nobel Prize Committee is ever since Yasser Arafat won. It's a radical leftist front group that hijacked Alfred Nobel's prize. Savage reminded us that Nobel created dynamite, and he's named it the Dynamite Prize for years. He says Obama has moved us toward world peace about as much as British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain did by appeasing the Nazis. Quote, for a brief moment there was world peace, and then in the blink of an eye it was over. Savage was surprised pleasantly that many liberal bloggers were also responding negatively to the news. Liberals don't like this. Amazing. This whole thing smacks of comic absurdity, I said. And then, of course, I added liberalism is a mental disorder, which she didn't publish because it would be an affront to our editor, who was probably rushing off to the psychiatrist for his weekend supply. But there's a new song out by a rap group called The Infidel, who I'm going to make famous, the same way Jimi Hendrix was made famous by a disc jockey in Paris in 1967. Liberalism is a mental disorder written by the infidel. You can't copyright titles. I let them have it anyway. But what they say is far from reason, common sense and intellect, proper mindset, total lack of respect for vets and Christ ain't nice, totally out of order. Liberalism, the mental disorder. Time to set the record straight. Call BS when I see it. Shed light on the half-wits who want us defeated, all because of an illness too hard to eradicate. It's liberalism, the mental disorder, a sad state of mind, impervious to common sense and reason. To them, nothing is out of line. Everything is in season. Right or wrong makes no difference to them. If it feels good, do it. So I have to keep my distance from them because they're out of the mainstream, but they say that I am because I love my country and the God of Abraham. Damn, sham after sham they pull to get the prize. They come equipped with the wool to cover your eyes, then infiltrate the schools, courts, and churches, undermining American values while filling their purses because it takes money to fool the masses. So I wrote this in the form of conservative x-ray glasses. Tell a lie long enough the sheep will believe it, but ain't fooling me, you ain't schooling me with your so-called bleeding heart. Ain't leaked the CC against the death penalty, but killing the babies. Want the CAKE and stuff their face with it. Like Rosie O'Donnell, big as a spaceship. Can't shout me down like liberal students do conservatives. Toss a pie at me and catch an uppercut from this wordsmith. That's what I call exercising my free speech, but you want to silence me. Plus those who agree, know this right now, you ain't controlling me. Even if your cameras are roaming the streets patrolling me. Where's the ACLU when we need them? Oh yeah, they only help gays, atheists, race baiters, and faith haters, and anyone else who tears the fabric of this country, sold their souls while stealing ours for a bag full of money. Verse 3, another symptom of this fatal disease is their willingness to treat the enemy to a dish of appease, too concerned about gay marriage and hugging some trees, unaware that it's tied on him like neck TIEs, 100 degrees of separation from reality, will burn off like calories due to their abnormalities, leading to casualties of epic proportions. Just check this. Read on and read on and on. It's all by a group I never heard of, but they did a good job. And now we will play the song Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, written by the Infidel, by a group I've never yet met. We got Infidel on. Aha, from Minnesota. Infidel, welcome to the Savage Nation. Where are you located?
Dr. Savage, I am located in St. Paul, Minnesota.
How did you guys come to write this song up in liberal Minnesota?
Well, you know, I tell you what, I was, truly inspired by your work. I was turned on to your show in 2004, just a couple of months after I had a stroke, actually.
And a stroke? A young guy with a stroke?
I had a stroke, sir. And thanks.
Well, Chris, let me ask you something. Your first name is what? You want me to call you Infidel?
Well, that's the stage name. My name is Greg.
All right, but Infidel, let me ask you something, Greg. Did you copyright this song? I hope you did.
I was inspired by your book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. And that's
yeah, but wait a minute. Hold on now. I'm going to make you famous the way Jimi Hendrix was discovered by a French disc jockey in 67. I want your song to move up on the charts. I need to help people who are trying to help the country. Is that song protected by anyone yet?
Well, you know, it's the old school poor man's copyright. And we're moving.
All right. It is copyright. I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you, Chris. I'm sorry, Greg. If you will give your email address to me, I will turn this over to my copyright attorney, and we'll do this for you.
Wow.
Because there's no reason you shouldn't benefit from your own talent. Got it. After all, my name is not Soprano. I don't live in New Jersey, man. I don't have to put my name on it because my name's all over it. You know what I mean?
Right, right. You don't have to get one of your lawyers.
No. Hey, Greg, how many guys are in your group?
Well, I tell you, it's myself, and then my brother helped produce the music. He was actually my foster brother. My parents were taking care of a lot of foster kids through the years, and he is very talented. He's actually in Dallas now. And
but are you guys actually, have you done any other rap music before this?
I have. I've been writing rhymes and, performing a little bit here and there, but I've always written during high school and during college, and always just kept at it, stayed going. And after the stroke, I kind of put it down, because I didn't think I was confident enough to do it. Sometimes I couldn't even remember my rhymes. But, to God be the glory, I still, have it now. It's all back. I'm healthy. And just moving forward with something that's, well, positive, something that means.
I'll tell you the truth. When I first got this forwarded to me by, I forget who, honestly, my mind's slipping right now. I said, wait, that's great. I don't see anybody doing, I think Joe Farah did of World Net Daily. He found it first. I don't think anyone's going to write a rap song about Rush Limbaugh's lyrics, do you?
No way. No way. No, you know what?
Now, can I ask a sensitive question? Because I'm very curious, and I'd ask it if we were off the air. Are you black or white?
I am black. I'm glad you said black, because I don't like the African-American term. I just like the good old-fashioned black.
Well, I don't call myself a European American. I don't go by any definition of any kind in that regard. I'm a party of one, as you know, and you, Infidel, are apparently a musician party of one. Do you think there's a changing tide somewhere in America where more black men of your generation are waking up to the con?
Yes, 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 and I will say it again, yes. It's just so long that we, for some reason, just blindly just going to one side rather than just go ahead and evaluating everything that's in front of us.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're almost out of time, but I want to keep in touch with you. We'll have you on again next week. Stay in the line. We're going to get this over to my lawyer. Make sure you make some money for it. Here is Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, written by the Infidel on the Savage Nation. All right, they screwed it up. Okay, what can you do? We'll do it again next time. Thank you.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So, Obama wins the Dynamite Prime, all right, and I'm contacted by Newsweek, and they want my reaction to Obama being awarded the Dynamite Prize, I mean the Nobel Prize. I told her, well, I was not surprised that a man who won the presidency because of white liberal guilt should now be awarded a prize that was created because of white liberal guilt. You can't forget that Alfred Nobel, the man who created the Nobel Prize, also made his fortune, actually, through the patenting of dynamite. And he created the Nobel Prize out of guilt for having made a fortune from this destructive compound. And that's why I call the Nobel Prize the Dynamite Prize. But it may be true that in appeasing the Hitler of Iran, Obama may have actually created a temporary peace. I mean, let's give him credit. Just as Neville Chamberlain, Prime Minister of England in the 1930s, created a temporary peace when he gave away Czechoslovakia to Nazi Germany, and he called it peace in our time. Well, that peace certainly lasted for a year, from September of 38, when he gave away the Sudetenland, until September of 39, when Hitler invaded Poland. We have yet to see how long the peace of Barack Hussein Obama will last, but we do know that history is repeating itself. The actual article in Newsweek says, Michael Savage says, no comment on Obama's prize, just kidding. No comment, which he really did say, lasted exactly 1 second. Then Savage shared some of the disbelief his listeners can expect to hear soon on his show. He said, this is unbelievable. No one can believe this. What has he done? Has he discovered a cure for brain cancer I don't know about? Well, no. Is he moving us towards world peace, he wonders? Last I check, Ahmadinejad is speeding along with his bomb. If Obama is an anti-war president, why hasn't he pulled us out of Afghanistan? Savage's real ire isn't directed at Obama, but at the Nobel Committee. We all know what the Nobel Prize Committee is ever since Yasser Arafat won, said Savage. It's a radical leftist front group that hijacked Alfred Nobel's prize. Nobel created dynamite and felt really guilty about it, Savage reminds us. But Obama, he says, has moved us towards world peace about as much as British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain did by appeasing the Nazis. Savage was surprised pleasantly that many liberal bloggers were also responding negatively to the news. Liberals? Liberals don't like this? Amazing. This whole thing smacks of comic absurdity. What she left out was when I said liberalism is a mental disorder, because that sort of says it all, don't you think?
I think so. But even the liberals I talked to this morning can't understand why Obama was given the prize.
Well, we can. He's in good company. He's in company with Yasser Arafat. And if they could give it to Al Gore, the biggest con man of the century, why shouldn't they give it to Obama, who's in the same league? Remember, the original prize in 1895 by the Swedish industrialist Alfred Nobel stated that the prize should go to, quote, the person who shall have done the most or the best work for fraternity between the nations, and the abolition or reduction of standing armies and the formation and spreading of peace congresses. Notice that the words shall have done in the award's original charter clearly indicate that this award should be based on an evident accomplishment. Doesn't Obama appear to lack those on his resume to date? I think so. What are his achievements to his credit? I doubt he has done very much at all. Now, you turn on the news, which I did, and all I watched were car chases. I was watching the news, and every channel on cable was filled with coverage of a car chase that was taking place in Dallas, Texas. Every channel covering it. There were 20 police cars all driving after a single truck. Now, it turns out that the reason they were chasing the pickup truck was that the owner hadn't paid at the gas station. 20 police cars chasing after a guy who hadn't paid for his gas. I asked myself, how much gas did they waste going after the guy who beat him on the gas tank? The police have nothing to do. You see, they're not allowed to go after illegal alien drug smugglers in Texas, and so they go after people who can't afford to pay gas. I wonder how many illegal aliens got over the border while half the Dallas Police Department went after one guy who didn't pay for his gasoline. Remember, 30% of those in U.S. prisons are illegal aliens. They probably commit more than half the crime. But instead, well, the cops go after one guy who probably had his job stolen by an illegal alien and couldn't pay to fill up his gas tank, owned by Hugo Chavez. What a world we live in, I thought.
It's amazing. The whole thing took just over 2 hours when it was all said and done.
Did they catch him? I couldn't watch the ending.
They did finally catch him. They ran him off the road into a sort of a mud puddle, and they finally got him.
He came out swinging, or?
No, he came out, fell out on the ground, and they just piled on top of him.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear it for poverty. Poverty sucks. Makes people do crazy things.
Yeah.
Alfred Nobel. Dynamite, by the way, is an absorbent mixture soaked in nitroglycerin, then compacted into a cylindrical shape and wrapped in paper. TNT is different. TNT is a specific chemical compound called 2,4-6-trinitrotoluene. So whatever that's worth, the dynamite prize.
Really doubled the number of people who were killed in World War One. They don't use it in military purposes anymore, but back in World War One, they did.
Yeah, millions were killed with it, weren't they?
That's right. That's right.
Nobel, by the way, named his compound dynamite because it refers to the Greek word for strength. Dynamite is the Greek word for strength. I mean, it's based on it. He originally wanted to call this highly powerful substance Nobel's safety powder. Sounds cute, doesn't it? Sort of like Johnson & Johnson's baby powder. You put it on your baby's diaper. Now listen to this. Originally, the French knew who Nobel was. The schmucks in America know nothing about anything, so they don't know who he was. There was a premature publication in 1888 of a premature obituary of Nobel by a French newspaper, which actually condemned him for his invention of dynamite. And they said in the obituary, Le marchand de la mort est mort. The merchant of death is dead. You hear this? And they went on to say, Dr. Alfred Nobel, who became rich by finding ways to kill more people faster than ever before, died yesterday. And it's ironic, isn't it, that this prize is given to all of these leftists. I think it's amazing. He left 31 million kroner at his death, by the way, in 1896, equivalent to about 1.8 billion kroner, or $250 million in 2008 to fund the prize. It's almost nothing. More of that is stolen every day by the people on Wall Street. It makes you wonder why anybody pays much attention to that small amount of money anymore. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Cambridge debate cancellation took me really by surprise. I just can't understand how this debating society, rich in history, going back to 1815, could ignore their own legacy and do this to me, and not even give truthful excuses behind their cancellation. I'd like to hear Selwyn Duke on this. He's always good for an insight or two.
Hello, Michael. It's great to be with you again. I just wish it could be under happier circumstances, but I guess that's never the case in this world. Well, Michael, I heard the news, of course, and really, I have to say that I'm not at all surprised that Cambridge withdrew your invitation to debate. Because, you see, they have a problem. The truth can be just as damning via satellite as in person, so they have a big problem. And you know, Michael, I'll point out something. It's fitting that you named your last book Banned in Britain, and I'll tell you why. It's a badge of honor. You see, in a way, the UK government has paid you a high compliment, because just as vampires hate the brightest light in the sky, liberals hate the brightest lights of truth. As the Bible says, the Bible explains very well why the British government hates you, Michael. What fellowship hath light with darkness? The darkness hates the light. But you know what? Fear of and hostility toward the truth really is the issue. And here's the point. Many people just don't understand the philosophical underpinnings of the left. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. And I'll introduce this by pointing out something shocking. Listen to this. Under Section 13(1) of the Canadian Human Rights Act, if you're faced with a hate speech charge, the truth is no defense. Now, let that sink in for a moment.
Wait, the truth is no defense? So now you can be arrested based on a lie and the truth is inadmissible in court? That's really great. It sounds like the Soviet Union didn't fall, it just moved west.
Well, Michael, maybe that's why we have Vladimir Putin warning us about socialism. But look, think about this. Jesus said the truth will set you free, but the left says the truth can get you thrown in jail. Now, why would they have such contempt for truth? Well, it's for a simple reason. They don't believe in it. They're moral relativists. They believe that truth is synonymous with opinion. That's simply a matter of perspective. So, for this reason, in their eyes, truth carries no more weight than opinion. So, as a rule, liberals don't believe in absolute truth. But since truth actually does exist, this means they're denying reality. But why do they deny it? Well, consider this. I remember that Bill Maher, that leftist comedian, once said on his old show, Politically Incorrect, get this, and this is just about a verbatim quotation, "The concept of absolute truth is scary." That's what he said. The concept of absolute truth is scary. And when Maher said that, he was baring his soul, really. You see, leftists tend to find the truth scary because it threatens them, because their beliefs, just like their lifestyles, have no basis in truth. And because of this, because the truth contradicts their beliefs, they must avoid it at all costs. Now, how they handle this in their own lives and minds is that they rationalize. They can preach global warming while using more energy than Detroit because they're so special and their mission is so great and good. They can preach socialism like Michael Moore or George Soros while enriching themselves because, well, unlike those infernal capitalists, they're not driven by greed. But this only silences any inner voice that might utter truth. But what about the voices in the wider world? Well, they're a little harder to silence, aren't they? So how do you control them? Well, you enact hate speech laws. You institute speech codes on college campuses and in workplaces. You shout speakers down at college events. You intimidate people with politically correct social codes. You make sure that you don't give speakers of truth jobs in the mainstream media or professorships. You create the fairness doctrine, and you try to control the internet. You stigmatize the truth by labeling it racist, sexist, homophobic, and anti-Islamic. You see, in just the way that the best gladiator won in the Roman arena, in a free and open arena of ideas, the truth will prevail. Because it can't be refuted, it can't be destroyed, it can only be denied, and suppressed, and obscured. And this is the problem leftists have. You see, when a normal person, when a seeker of truth finds that his agenda conflicts with truth, he changes his agenda. But the relativistic liberal loves his agenda more than the truth, so when there's that conflict between the two, he simply rationalizes the truth away. But those who would speak truth can't be rationalized away, so they have to be shut up and shut away. So understand, Michael, and I know you do understand this, that this is why your debate appearance was canceled. It was canceled because the truth can't be refuted. The socialist British government fears your voice because the concept of absolute truth is scary. And they silence you for the same reason why the Soviet Union imprisoned political dissidents 25 years ago and the Chinese neocons do today. It's for the same reason why the Soviets persecuted the church 25 years ago and the Chinese do today. You see, when you're an adversary of the truth, the best way to win a debate, well, is not to have the debate.
Yes, and this explains why I'm the unknown man to the mainstream media. They're afraid of anyone who might expose their full reality, the matrix they've devised for the sheeple.
Well, that's exactly the reason, Michael. But look, now, I have an important message here today. Most who call themselves conservatives do not. They do not understand the liberal enemy confronting them. And what I mean is, you're not going to reason liberals out of their misguided notions. It's not going to happen. How could you? How can you reason with a group that says the truth is no defense? How can you reason with people who don't even believe in truth, but think it's all emotion-based opinion? Remember something. Reason is what? Reason is a process, one by which you determine answers. But if you don't believe in truth, you can't believe there are answers, only feelings. And if there are no answers, there's no reason for reason. This is why liberals are so unreasonable. And I'll explain it differently. It's much like this. If you believe that a great treasure exists, you'll want to search for it, right? And searching, like reasoning, is a process. It presupposes that there's something to find. So it follows that if you don't believe the treasure exists, you won't search for it. And liberals don't believe that great treasure, truth, exists, so they have no reason to conduct that search, which we call using reason.
Yes, liberals are detached from reason, and this is why I say liberalism is a mental disorder. Who else would give this untested president, actually this failure of a president thus far, a Nobel Prize?
Yes, Michael, insanity is a place where there is no reason, and reason and liberals don't have the same address. But given this, how do we fight our spiritual war? And it is spiritual at bottom, make no mistake about it. Well, I want to tell you about a system called spiritual triage. Now, there are three groups. One is the converted, and they'll be on our side no matter what. We don't have to worry too much about them. Then you have the second group. Now, these are the ones on the fence, to whom we have to devote our energy because they can be swayed. But then you have that third group, the relativistic liberals, and I call them the initiated. Now, I want to emphasize something. We traditionalists who believe in truth should never, ever labor under the misconception that the initiated who don't believe in truth are anything like us, because they're not. Understand that these hardcore leftists are like children. They're like two-year-olds. So forget moral appeals, because moral appeals don't work with people who don't believe in morality. And don't be shocked when they lie, either, because the truth means nothing to those who don't believe in truth. And, again, you're not going to reason them out of their misguided notions. Not going to happen. As Ben Franklin said, you cannot reason a man out of a position he has not reasoned himself into. All you can do with children is discipline them. And in this case, in the case of the initiated, that means defeating them. And you know what? If we don't, the consequence will be a civilization run by children, and it's going to look an awful lot like the Lord of the Flies, and it's going to come to the same fiery end. Michael, thank you for having me on your show, a place where truth is still spelled with a capital T, and God bless you and your great audience.
Thanks, Selwyn Duke. I'm trying to fight the left's attempt to blind us from the truth. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
Let's go over the clips, the sound bites that we use this week with our end of the week review. We start with Bill Clinton talking about Gavin Newsom, any Tusum Newsom, walking the walk.
Gavin Newsom has walked the walk. He just doesn't talk about it.
The 42nd president says he understands the power of alternative energy.
I love solar energy and I love wind.
And believes Newsom gets it too.
San Francisco may be the greenest city in the entire country. And it's because of his leadership.
Leadership? We talked about Cambridge University canceling the debate with Michael Savage. And my dream that I had about somebody on our government speaking up.
Well, I should say at the outset that Savage is a friend, so I may be a little biased here. I don't know all the facts, but I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry. Number two, that Cambridge acted stupidly.
Ha ha. Here is the sound of what true political debate sounds like.
Now, when the debate is held in the country, people will choose our policies and reject theirs.
I tell you what, find a bit of courage, discover a bit of bottle, get in your car, go down to Buckingham Palace and call that election.
I believe that all parties have an interest in sorting this out.
Well, if he feels that strongly, he should come and debate these issues.
Yeah.
What can possibly be more important than that the Prime Minister should be here to debate the issue? Isn't that the kind of leadership we're entitled to?
I welcome the debate we're going to have in the country on this. I welcome the debate.
He is treating the British people like fools.
Yeah.
Next he'll be telling us how much he admires Margaret Thatcher.
Here I am speaking with James Dellingpole, a journalist for the United Kingdom's Telegraph, about the shameful behavior of Cambridge University. Unbelievable. Well, Mr. Dellingpole, I cannot go to Britain, but I was very honored when Cambridge invited me to speak and to defend, basically, not only my own honor, because really they've condemned an innocent man, but also to defend the principle of free speech in general under the big umbrella of political, you know, fighting against political correctness. But for them to have canceled this under the pretext of a technical this and all of that, and then in the same letter saying in the big paragraph that it's for legal reasons, and then today proceed after saying they were not proceeding. These are duplicitous kids, and they inherited. Do they understand what they inherited in the Cambridge Union? Do they have any idea what blood has been shed for them to have that freedom at Cambridge? Do they have any idea what they've just done to their own reputation?
Yeah, I doubt they do. I doubt it's even occurred to them.
Yeah, doubt it's even occurred to them. That's exactly the truth. From the Battle of Britain to bubblegum on Piccadilly or something.
When were you last in Britain?
The last I was in Britain when a very dear friend of mine, his wife passed away. It must be 1989 or so.
Yeah.
And
what do you remember of it?
I've always loved going to London. I've always found it to be a dynamic, exciting city. I love the British people. I used to comment on the can-do attitude that I saw, but that was a long time ago. I mean, they always had that cheery, chin-up, can-do attitude. I love that attitude about the British. I don't know if it's still there.
Well, I wonder whether, you know, I think it's a shame you can't come here, because I think you'd be interested now to see what's happened when you've been run by socialists for 12 years. I mean, it is extraordinary, you know. The stories that would make your eyes water that you hear about, you know, the government poking its nose into every nook and cranny of your private life. It is quite extraordinary. You know, we have inside our dustbins now in certain boroughs, we have these spying devices to check that you're not disposing of your rubbish incorrectly.
Oh, come on, really?
I absolutely swear to you.
And who could forget Pastor David Manning? Remember him? Or, well, you don't know who he is because he's never seen on Fox News.
Well, let me say a couple of things. One is that it is pretty obvious that Bill O'Reilly has shifted gears greatly on the matter of Barack Hussein Obama. Number two, it appears that Sean Hannity also has shifted gears on the whole matter of Barack Hussein Obama. You can very easily rationalize and say, well, they're going after other issues. Well, okay, they very well may be, but you and I know that nothing is as critical. Nothing will be able to bring truth to America about Barack Hussein Obama other than his birth certificate. I would like to say that O'Reilly and Hannity and Beck, Glenn Beck, have sold out. With them, it's just business. It's pure business. And with Glenn Beck, it is pure entertainment. I mean, this fella is into the entertainment aspect of the political genre of news today.
He took on the talking skirts on Fox and defended me.
Hey, Hannity, why don't you have Michael Savage on? Just once a year, just one time a year. Just have Michael Savage on one time a year. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it because that's not what they want. They don't want the truth out there. They can't handle the truth. They don't want it out there. Glenn Beck, bring Michael Savage on.
Now, you turn on the news, which I did, and all I watched were car chases.
Driver of this pickup truck pulled into a gas station, filled up the gas tank, took off without paying, and that is how this all began.
At least it means he's got a full tank of gas.
This truck has been involved in a high-speed pursuit now for the better part of 1 hour.
He's got four squads following him right now, several different jurisdictions on his tail.
This thing reaching speeds upwards of 70 miles per hour at certain times.
And that car chase is still underway in the Dallas area.
It's got a long trail of police cars behind it. Boy, they must be pretty frustrated at this point. They're probably getting hungry for lunch. They probably want to get this thing over with.
It's been going on for the better part of an hour and 15 minutes there. The truck's going. The cop tries the pit maneuver, and the truck just keeps going. He's kind of looking at his rear view like, you can, come on. And this thing has been going on now for 2 hours. A backside pit. There he goes. Into the water, and
there he is.
Thrown to the ground. Well, by our clock, 2 hours and about 2 or 3 minutes, and the car chase in Texas has finally ended.
So, Obama wins the dynamite prize.
A remarkable announcement from Norway's Nobel Institute. U.S. President Barack Obama has been awarded the 2009 Nobel Prize for Peace.
It's a great moment for America and, of course, for President of the United States.
They've awarded it to him for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples.
As well as his outreach to the Muslim world and attempts to curb nuclear proliferation.
An extraordinary end to a remarkable year. A man who's been in office less than 1 year but has quickly become a symbol of progress between the races.
Well, that's it for another week on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Herson.
Hi, Michael. In its attempt to convince middle America to give up their rights in a healthcare takeover, the Obama administration has decided to tap the place that supports pedophiles and rejects patriots. You know what it is, Hollywood. Nothing like the post-Roman Polanski era Hollywood crowd to help when a propaganda war is being waged. Obama has recruited some trendy Hollywood celebrities, including actresses Rosario Dawson and Kate Walsh, along with a musician from the Black Eyed Peas named Will.i.am, to help stuff the throats of our citizenry with his version of healthcare hope and change. The Hollywood stars will provide useful idiocy in the form of celebrity judges for a contest. It's like a reality show competition to see who can develop the best video con job.
No, I'm sick of this.
An Obama organization, Organizing for America, a part of the Democratic National Committee, have set up the contest to determine the best television ad for a government-controlled healthcare system. Contestants must submit a 30-second ad with sufficient propagandistic persuasive power to convince people to give up their liberty. The winner will have his or her ad broadcast nationally. Now, in addition to Dawson and the Black Eyed Peas guy, the panel of judges being announced by Organizing for America consists of a bunch of other actors and Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane. Also, some political types will weigh in on the judging, including DNC Chairman Tim Kaine, DNC Executive Director Jen O'Malley Dillon, Representative Patrick Murphy, and Obama Campaign Manager David Plouffe. Oh, we're excited to have such an esteemed and talented panel of judges, the Organizing for America spokesperson said. By the way, if you want to compete, your video is due October 18th. A winner will be announced in early November. And it just goes to show that when the government wants to convince the populace to accept draconian power grabs, the celebrity crowd are always ready and willing to be tools of the takeover. Similar is the way the British government apparently killed your debate via video link at the Cambridge Union in England. The irony here is thick.
Oh, don't get me started.
A debate on the subject of political correctness is canceled because Michael Savage's point of view on the subject is too politically incorrect. It illustrates something about the enemies of freedom that are embedded in the Brit government, embedded in our government, and are found in the movie czars of Hollywood. They are cowards. They really have no desire to debate ideas. It is their goal to shut down the expression of ideas that they dislike. These Cambridge Union leaders claimed that they canceled the debate with great regret and that it was, such a difficult decision. They pointed to technical, financial, and legal reasons. These were merely a pretext to cover up the real reason the debate was canceled. The British government clearly did not want this debate to take place. The simple fact is Gordon Brown's failed leftist government would be and should be embarrassed and afraid of world attention being given to their act of including an American talk show icon in the same category as Muslim extremists and leaders of hate groups. I mean, this just makes your account of the whole sordid tale, your book, Banned in Britain, it makes it that much more important to those of us who care about freedom. It may be up to the citizens of the UK to toss out the Brown regime and put in a government that will make you whole by removing your name from that blasted list of murderers and terrorists, by canceling your appearance in Cambridge and not allowing you to tell your tale of political correctness gone mad. A message has been sent to the world, and that message is, you already won the debate. Keep the faith, Michael. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. Roman Abramovich is a Russian oligarch, one of the richest men on earth, if not the. And Roman lost more money last year than most billionaires can ever imagine having. He lost $20 billion. But that didn't stop Roman from spending. He still had enough left over to buy several more estates and keep building the biggest private yacht in the world. This year is no different. Roman Abramovich just bought a $90 million 70-acre vacation stop in St. Bart's, breaking the record for the most expensive price tag paid for a private home this year. Let me repeat that. He bought, in a down market, a $90 million 70-acre vacation spot in St. Bart's. Huh. How do you like that? So today I'll talk a little bit more about the amazing stuff of Roman Abramovich. Why? I don't know. It's fun. I like looking at his toys. He didn't take it from me. Did he take it from you?
Yeah, eat the rich man. It's a shame while people are starving. Then he has a yacht and cars. Yeah, down with the people, man. Be like the bums in San Francisco, man. There's no excuse for homelessness when you have pigs like that, man.
I don't know about you. I'd rather look at the stuff of Roman Abramovich than the ripped clothing of a bum in the streets of San Francisco. He owns a lot of nice stuff. I'm going to read about it. Look at the boats this guy owns. Never mind the house that was once the home to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, who gave up the British crown in 36. Wasn't he crypto-Nazi, the Duke of Windsor? Yeah. He was a little bit on the... Okay. Roman bought the estate for $27 million 5 years ago and has spent at least that much on its renovation. Well, at least a lot of craftsmen got work in England. Instead of puking on car fenders, they went to work putting in electrical and plumbing and carpentry. Let's see. In 08, Roman brought this 14,000-square-foot house with 11 bedrooms on 200 acres in Snowmass, Colorado. It's at Wildcat Ridge in Snowmass Village, Colorado. Nice, if you like the snow. Then there's a beautiful rendition of an apartment he's building in London. But the boats interested me. The boats. Listen to what this guy owns. The smallest of his yachts is a 282-foot 282-foot yacht, the Extasia yacht. And that's the smallest one. He then owns the Polaris yacht. It is 377 feet long with a price tag of $300 million. Just gorgeous. But that's not his biggest. His biggest yacht is called the Eclipse. It is 540 feet long. It is the final stages of construction by German shipbuilder Blohm & Voss. Ooh, global warming. It should be running on Gavin Newsom's exhalations. This should be running on Bonnie Frank's. Well, we'll let it go at that. Eclipse is 540 feet long, two helipads, several hot tubs, a swimming pool, bulletproof glass, a steam room, and a personal submarine. World's biggest private yacht. He also has lasers to ward off prying paparazzi. That's not something that the hemorrhoid would need. He would put in lasers to make sure that the paparazzi do see him defecating. He also owns a 767-300 that was originally intended for Hawaiian Airlines, but then was customized. The plane has a 30-seat dining room on board along with other amenities. That's nice. It would be nice to have Roman Abramovich as a friend, wouldn't it? Flying somewhere and having dinner in the sky instead of a sandwich that if you ask for it too soon, they call it for the sky marshals. You were flying first class recently on American. If you ask for water before you take off, you go on a watch list. If you ask for water twice before you take off, they strap you to a chair and beat you with rubber truncheons. I don't know about you. I admire luxury items. They didn't take it from me. What do I care? Somebody has to own them. Why shouldn't it be him? Now, you ask yourself, he also owns a $2.2 million Ferrari FXX, one of only 30 built. I don't like driving racing cars. He owns a Ferrari 360, which I once had. Not a good car. I never liked a 360 Mondial at all. Never. It was a very rough car to drive. The 430 is far better. It's faster and it's more user-friendly. He owns the Chelsea Soccer Club, Modern Art Collection. I'm just looking, wait. I'm going to be through in a minute. And the wife he has, naturally, she's not ugly. Not ugly at all. Roman's wife is the classic, let us say, Slavic-esque beauty. Slavic-esque beauty. Now his girlfriend is Zaria Dzukova, a model. And he gave her 100 acres of the moon last year. He bought it through the Lunar Embassy and paid only $2,500 for the plot on the moon. Cute. Now, you ask yourself, how did he make his money? That's the interesting part. How did Roman Abramovich make his money, and how did he lose $20 billion? Now, that's the interesting part of the story. But we've talked enough about this. It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
So young and you're so old. This, my darling, I've been told. I don't care just what they say, 'cause forever I will pray. You and I will.
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.